All right, we're back for another episode of the Fried Egg Podcast, and tonight we have a guest, another architecture guest. We have Keith Reb with us. Keith is a longtime associate for Core and Crenshaw. He recently completed his first, independent design. He partnered up with Riley Johns to do a makeover of Orlando's Winter Park project. So you may have seen Keith. He's been making a lot of appearances on the Golf Channel, becoming quite the TV celebrity. So we're excited to have Keith on. Keith, thanks for coming on.
Hey, thanks, Andy. I appreciate it. Thank you for the listeners to tune in. I'm sure a lot of people are like, who is Keith Reb, and why are we tuning in? But hopefully at the end we kind of explain who I am and, kind of what I've been doing. So thank you for having me on.
Yeah, for sure. We're excited to talk architecture. I think you've got a very interesting story about how you got into architecture. It's kind of an unconventional way. So why don't you tell the listeners, how you became a golf course architect?
Well, I mean, it kind of first starts in Lincoln, Nebraska. I was doing concrete work. 15 years ago, if you would have talked to me, I would be standing in concrete with a concrete loop in my hand watching concrete come out of the back of a truck, I kind of thought that, this isn't exactly what I want to be doing, and I went and interviewed with Landscapes Unlimited, a golf course development company in Lincoln, Nebraska. I got hired on the spot, and I packed everything up the next week, and I moved to Agar, South Dakota, a town of 50 people, to live in a trailer down by the river. And, that was the start, making a big move, going to a place I've never been to. And, once I stepped on that golf course, it's a Grand Marsh design, and I looked out there and over the lake and everything there, I was like, man, this is what I want to be doing. And, really fell in love with being outside and doing that. And so that's kind of the first start of getting into golf. I didn't as a kid, I wasn't aspiring to be an architect or anything like that at that point. But, it's like more and more just seeing different golf courses and being exposed to these different places and working with Bill and Ben, it just, you can't help but just fall in love with, this business. So I'm
kind of curious. You said, so when you go on site, do you typically just live right on the golf course?
You try to find somewhere close. I mean, that place, when I was at Agar, the only place that we could live, you have the people there set you up a place to live and who you live with. it was an interesting kind of setup there. I got sent out there, and then I met Lloyd, a guy that I worked with there that started at the same time, probably about my dad's age, and that's who my roommate was going to be, So we're living in this trailer, I go into a little funny story that I told to Riley and Trevor and some of these guys, but, we'd work all week long hours, go home, and I'd kick back in the recliner, and Lloyd would, have a couple Bud Lights and then fall asleep on the couch. But he'd always eat Ritz crackers. And it was just funny, one day we're sitting there, and all of a sudden I look over, Lloyd's passed out, sleeping, and there's a mouse that came out of the couch and just eating crackers, it's just these funny stories of these places that you'll live at, and you, just looking over at a mouse, eating crackers, and I don't know. Funny story, maybe for some, but.
Yeah, it resonates with me. I used to work for a tech startup, and I had to travel from city to city, and we stayed in just the worst places. And one of them, we were staying in L.A., and we had this mockingbird, and we were staying in, a double-wide trailer, and this mockingbird would come out at, midnight every night and just tweet, all night long. One of my buddies, he would go out and spray it with a hose at, 3 in the morning. It was awful.
Yeah.
So funny things of, remote work.
Yeah. So, that's, kind of one of those places. You always try to find somewhere close just so it's convenient. So you move to different places.
Mm-hmm. So then, so you're kind of working along there, and Bill and Ben are get their contract to Duke Colorado Golf Club, and you get start working with them. Tell me a little bit about how you got looped in with Coren Crenshaw. And that was, you know, one of their earlier projects, if I have my timeline.
Yeah. Yep. So, you know, I'm working with Landscapes Unlimited for about 3 years, and then I get assigned to go to work at Colorado Golf Club. Landscapes Unlimited was the contractor for Crenshaw, was the designer. So I was just kind of working as, you know, just a utility guy working on skid loaders, tractors, or anything like that. And, you know, I still remember it to this day, you know, meeting Phil and Ben on the fourth fairway out there. And, you know, I was just digging out a little ravine. And, you know, I think at that time I didn't even know that I was maybe digging a possible bunker or something. And, you know, Bill and Ben, you know, came up, and then Bill was like, you know, yeah, why don't you just dig this out a little bit here, or maybe cut a little here, but just have fun with it. I just thought, like, that concept always stuck with me, is thinking of just have fun. And I guess just thinking of that in kind of the contractor mode, have fun with it, just didn't really, I guess, connect. And, mm-hmm. and I just think, you know, when Bill mentioned that, you know, that was really a neat thing, you know, just go out and have fun. And, you know, and kind of what happened was, you know, as working and seeing the course evolve over time, a lot of the guys got called to go to Saguaro in Wichita in Arizona to go work on that golf course. So they kind of got pulled to the next one. And there was a little nine-hole, little par three course that needed to be built. And they kind of, you know, Bill and them gave me a chance. You know, that was the first opportunity to actually shape something or build a green or build a bunker. And, you know, I was able to work with Dave Asplund, just a great guy, I mean, a great friend, a great mentor. I mean, someone that it was so neat to work with Dave because he had so much knowledge and so much experience. And then me just being like a greenhorn, you know, coming in, but then yet both of us just working together and having a lot of fun. And he could teach me things. You know, I remember one day when we were going to go look at a green and I kind of forgot to move the dozer. You know, so we walked back to the tee and we're going to look at this green, but then I parked the dozer right in the front of the green. You know, he's just like, Keith, you know, you're showing your horns, you know, you're showing your green horns, you know. And it was just, you know, it was just neat working with Dave, and we had a lot of fun, and I think a lot of people really enjoy that par three course at Colorado Golf Club.
Mm-hmm. That's I'm hoping I saw there they got the mid-am in a few years, so fingers crossed I'll get out there to play in that, if not sooner. But yeah, I've heard nothing but great things about Colorado Golf Club. And then you're a big fan of the short course, right?
You know, I am, you know, I mean, you know, I'm not the greatest golfer either, you know, so, I mean, I enjoy kind of getting out there, learning the game and not getting beat up and having fun. And mm-hmm. I think that's a lot of things that we need to get back to is having fun, you know, getting around with a couple buddies, you know, and just shoot some shots and match play and, you know, just enjoy the game the way it should be played. And I just hope we get back to the roots, you know, and it looks like it's slowly getting that way with a lot of more, it seems like more courses are, you know, adding a short course, you know, and that it's exciting to see that. So.
Yeah, I think a great blueprint is, you know, taking courses, making them less holes and taking out some of the bad holes, making like things like putting courses or like little three-hole courses that somebody can go out and play three holes in 45 minutes. You know, I think one of the things golf can do is create more ways for people to do it quickly, because it's, you know, in today's day and age, I think it really needs to compete, have competitive options for like somebody's workout time. You know, people carve out an hour for working out. Like, why can't we figure out a way that's more fun than, you know, hitting a bucket of range balls for an hour, you know, whether it be putting courses, you know, short loops. So I'm on board with that.
Exactly. I'm 100%. So I guess, you know, kind of to go back to a little bit of the, you know, so after Colorado Golf Club, you know, kind of still working for Landscapes Unlimited, it's a little bit later in the few years down the road, I get a call, you know, to come out to Sugarloaf Mountain in Claremont, Florida, to be the first official, you know, project to work for Corp Crenshaw. So, you know, getting that phone call, I'm like, you know, I'm in Colorado, it's snowing, I'll be in Florida, you know, the next day. So that was the first official Corp Crenshaw project that I worked on. You know, the others were with Landscapes. So
Sugarloaf's got kind of an interesting story. It's like one of those, you know, golf courses that has the sad end. So tell us a little about Sugarloaf and, you know, the course for those that, you know, don't know about it.
Yeah, I mean, Sugarloaf Mountain is the second highest point in Florida. It's on sugar sand. It's a really neat site. You really don't feel like you're at, you know, you don't feel like you're in Florida when you're on that site. You know, I mean, it was right at 2008, you know, I mean, the bubble was bursting. It was going to be real estate driven. You know, it was probably not, you know, really didn't get out there in the media, didn't get the exposure that it needed to. You know, it struggled, and then it finally went back to nature. You know, I mean, you go back there right now. I went back there a couple of years ago. You know, there's still bunker rakes and old bunkers, and, you know, it's basically, you know, tumbleweeds and nettle grass, and it's a shame. It's a great site. You know, I would love someday for someone to figure out a way to disconnect real estate with it and be able to bring that course back to life.
Yeah, I can only imagine. I get sad when I read about golf course closings, but, like, I mean, like, how sad were you when you heard the news that it was kind of shutting down when, like, you know, you spent, like, months of your life, you know, pouring sweat into it?
I mean, you know, it does. It does bother you a little bit. You know, I mean, all these guys with Corp Crenshaw that I work with, you know, they put their hearts into building the best golf they can, and Bill and Ben and everyone, you know, they put themselves into it. They put their heart into it, and it's nothing worse than seeing it just, you know, go away. You know, it's done. It's closed down. The doors are shut. I mean, you know, it's still kind of weird. You go out there, you drive by the golf course, and they still have the old sign up, like, you know, Bill and Ben's first golf course in Florida. You know, I mean, it's tough. I mean, you know, maybe someone will go out and take a look and realize the potential of the site, and, you know, bring them back out there. So
it's fingers crossed. That's why, you know, as long as it doesn't turn into houses, it's got a chance, right?
Yep, exactly.
So I think, you know, obviously Corp and Crenshaw, since, you know, they have become the primo guys in golf course design and are kind of leading this charge of the, you know, golden age, like kind of the new golden age of architecture with Doak and Johans and all, you know, these young up-and-comers. You know, having worked with them for like 10 plus years now, what's something that you've noticed that they do so well that, like, you know, that the common person might overlook, and, you know, or even the, you know, sharpest of architecture geeks would overlook, that they do just so well with their sites, and why, you know, all these sites turn out such big successes?
I mean, I would say probably one thing is, you know, there's no ego there. The egos aren't there. They know how to bring the best potential out of the people that they're working with, but also the site. You know, Bill is the best at, like, you know, bringing the potential out of the people that he's around, you know. I mean, everyone's got, you know, a talent or something to bring to a site. And if you kind of limit the input or the people that's involved, you tend to lose the potential of the site. And I think that's one thing that Bill and Ben and a lot of these other guys know how to bring the right people and talented people together and the team together to really bring the project, to, you know, bring out the, again, potential of the project. So,
with the kind of team, like, what's typically a build team look like on a daily basis at a site? So, like, you're working on the new course at Big Cedar Lodge now. Like, you know, what type of, what's the size of the team that you guys usually have out there?
I mean, right now, we got, you know, Jimbo Wright, great shaper, awesome shaper, been with Bill and Ben forever. Very talented guy, you know, is out here. And you got Jeff Bradley, you know, a.k.a. Bunker Guru, out here doing the bunkers, you know. I mean, so you have different specialists, you know, that do that are on site. You know, a lot of times it's three, four guys. It's just, you know, different sites have different things. You know, like when I was out in Tasmania, it was just Dave Axlin and myself. And, mm-hmm. and then we, you know, taught the on you know, the guys locally there on how to, you know, to build stuff and finish things. So
mm-hmm. what would you say is, you know, your favorite site that you've worked on? Is it, you know, Winter Park, or was it one of the Core Crenshaw sites?
You know, I get that question quite a bit. They off farm, Tasmania, Barnboogle, to working at Cabot Cliffs. You know, Stream Song, Old Town, you know, Yokohama, a country club in Japan. You know, I mean, they all have their own little characters to them. I mean, it's hard to pick one out that I would say would be the best. But, you know, I mean, Tasmania was just, you know, a really neat site, all sand. And working with the owners there was just a really cool place. So.
Mm-hmm. So, you know, it's listed you as a shaper. So for, you know, just the maybe novice architecture fans, could you walk through, you know, like what, you know, a shaper does and, you know, how you get good at shaping?
You know, I mean, I guess, you know, how you get good at shaping is I think you kind of start from, you know, a shovel. You start from, you know, shoveling things. You kind of learn how to build things, you know, by hand. And then you kind of work your way up. You know, you get more opportunities to get on different pieces of equipment, like maybe a skid loader or a mini-X, and then an excavator and then a dozer. You know, it takes a lot of patience. You know, it's you know, what we do is, you know, we're normally shaping bunkers or fairways or greens. And it's just, I don't know, it's what I look forward to. It's like my office each day. You know, I hop in a dozer and I can move earth and be creative. And, you know, that's one thing that Bill and Ben, which is so neat out here, is they don't put you in a box of, like, here's exactly, you know, this is exactly what you need to build. Here's a plan. You got to hit these grades. You know, they're like, you know, this is what we're kind of looking at. You know, but if you see something or something happen, run with it. You know, they never put you in a situation where they're trying to put you in a box. They give you a lot of creative freedom out there, and I mean, that's what just makes it so much fun, is that, you know, each day out there you're doing something a little different, and you're just being able to have fun and not worrying about making a mistake or having Bill and Ben or someone come out and say, you know, man, that's, you know, what did you do here? You messed up or something like that. They would never do that. And sometimes if a mistake happens or something like that, it ends up being something that's
even better than what anyone would have thought would have happened. You know? So it's really neat working with Bill and Ben, and they really give you that creative freedom, and you never have to worry about making a mistake out there.
That's awesome. It's usually the way people do their best work is when they have the freedom and know that, hey, you know, if I do something and I believe in it, you know, they're going to back me up. So that's cool. What's your favorite kind of feature to build? Not necessarily while you're building it, but like, what do you think is kind of like the coolest feature to put on a golf course?
I guess, you know, features, I would say, you know, like a kicker slope or something like that. You know, if there's a certain slope that if someone plays it, then they're rewarded. And then mm-hmm. they might not know, like, hey, there's a little slot here that if I hit this here, that the ball might run. You know, that's just one thing that Bill, you know, you see the influences that.
Your favorite Golden Age architects. Obviously, we like Golden Age architects at the Fried Egg. Would love to hear kind of in your studying, you know, who kind of stands out in your mind.
I mean, I would definitely say 100% Perry Maxwell. You know, I mean, having the opportunity to work at Old Town and seeing how he laid that golf course on land and the greens and, you know, the little Maxwell rolls and things like that he has in those greens. I mean, you know, I mean, for me, you know, not really coming up being like, okay, this is what I'm going to do. I'm going to be an architect. You know, Perry Maxwell was a banker, fell in love with the game, and then let that love kind of transition into actually becoming an architect. So I kind of relate to that, you know, and it just, I mean, Old Town is just a special place. I mean, you get a chance to get out there and look at that. You see the influences that had on Bill's design, which is really neat to kind of come full circle to be on that site to say, now I kind of get why Bill builds a certain contour or maybe this certain type of grain. So that I think definitely Perry Maxwell, and I look forward to, as I have time off, to go look at more of his courses.
Yeah, what of his courses are highest on your kind of bucket list to see?
I mean, Prairie Dunes.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't, you know, Hutchinson, Kansas, maybe that far. Worked out there a lot, and that was what was cool about Old Town. Again, I'm working with Dave Axlin again. You know, him and I are working on that, you know, as a team. You get this architecture. You start, like you said, when you first get out there, and you start first getting a little taste of what it is, and you kind of get to see it on the ground, and you see that. And it gets you, and you want to learn more, and you want to go search out different golf courses. And, I mean, that's the biggest thing for me is, like, you know, coming from more of the construction side of things, there's more that I look forward to seeing more of these golf courses because I can look at it a way of, like, okay, how do you build that? You know, not just how is it designed, but then how can I actually build that? And what equipment would I need to build something neat like that? So I think kind of coming from a different angle, I mean, for me, it's that's what I look forward to is searching out more of these golf courses and learning more. I mean, I'm always learning, so.
Yeah, I think that everybody's always learning with architecture. It's, there's infinite cool little courses to see. I mean, I feel like I add 10 courses I want to go to every day, and it's, you know, the tough part about it. Hopefully in a lifetime you'll get to see all of them, but very unlikely that's going to happen.
Yeah.
In terms of, if you were going to describe what your dream project to work on would be, you know, what type of things would, you know, be the five characteristics that you'd say, you know, this is the ideal project and situation I'd want to build my own course on?
Well, I mean, I think the first you start with the team, you know, a bunch of guys that, you know, all get along, you know, they don't have egos, you know, they like to collaborate and just have fun. You know, I mean, I think the biggest thing is when you see these golf courses being built and everyone's having fun, I think it kind of gets into the DNA of that golf course. And it shows, like, you know, these guys really enjoyed being here and they had fun building this golf course. And I think that's the biggest thing is you know, if you have the team of guys, you know, like Riley, Trevor, you know, Andrew, Littlefield, you know, all these different, I mean, Blake, I mean, you could go on and on. These guys that just love what they do, they're very creative, but they don't let egos get in the way, you know. There might be a thing where, and also put Dave there. I got to put Dave Axelman, of course, because he's just no ego, greatest guy to work with. And it's just where you can say, hey, I'm stuck here. Why don't you come over here and work on this and kind of see what you can do, you know? And I think that's what makes it so much fun is when, you know, each person can kind of put their layer of creativity on a site. And that's what I look forward to. So my dream site would be working with a bunch of people that love the game of golf, love architecture, no egos, and want to have fun and build, you know, cool golf.
Yeah. I mean, I think everybody's best work comes when they're happy.
And on top of that, a sand site, 100% sand site on the coast. So yeah. You kind of add some of those, maybe in Tasmania or somewhere, you know. So, you know, you kind of add some of those things into it. But it just for me is just, the group of guys you have together, if it's a hard, rocky site, you still got guys that are enjoying it and having fun and like to get along and build cool golf. I mean, if it's a rocky site or if it's a sand site, it's about the team. So,
I mean, how much harder is it to shape stuff with a rocky site? I mean, obviously sand, you can see how you can just move it to every way you want it to move. But with rocky site, you know, what kind of – do you have different strategies? Like, what do you have to do to, you know, kind of get it into an ideal, you know, the way you want it?
I mean, you know, first you're looking at, you know, just the cost. I mean, you're looking at the equipment, the amount of equipment and heavy equipment you have to have on a site to move the rock or cut through the rock or if you have to blast. You know, then you think about how you get the irrigation in the ground. I mean, there's so many things that – you know, become more of an expense. You know,
so
it's just...
It sounds like just don't build on a rocky site.
Well, I mean, it depends on how, I guess, what kind of rock. I mean, like out here at the Ridge Course out here, you know, in Branson, it's rocky soil, but it breaks up pretty easily. I mean, you can rip it. And kind of break it up. And we're kind of on ridges, so we don't really get into the heavy rock.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, but if it's a site you're blasting away, then it's kind of like you got to kind of take that in consideration. Is this worth the cost? You know, I mean, are we just wasting someone's money here to get a couple good holes and then the rest are just mediocre? I mean, that's what you always got to look at on a site. What the potential of the full site is, not just to have one great signature hole and then walk away and the rest are like mediocre. So, you know, it's just, I think the biggest thing is you just really gotta think about the money you're spending on your client, you know, and making sure that, you know, you can get the full potential out of a site and not waste their money.
Yeah. I mean, it makes a lot of sense. You have to have 18 good holes. If you want to have a great course, you have to have 18 great holes. You know, those are the courses that stand out and are, you know, the top of the list.
You know, I think, you know, Bill always explained it like, you know, it's kind of like a roller coaster. You know, not every hole can always be at the very top, you know, and you're going down as a great, you know, you got to have, you know, connecting holes and stuff like that. And you got to have a good balance. you know, and it's like, you know, so many sites are just sacrificed for, oh, we're gonna get this one hole out here, and then the rest of the golf course isn't gonna fit, you know. I mean, I think Cabot Cliffs is, you know, the perfect example of that. I mean, you know, Bill has this amazing site that, you know, Ben Callendour, you know, had out there, and, you know, Bill's like, you know, you really need to get, you know, a little bit more property over here, and you really need to get this, you know. You know, and when a lot of times a lot of people would say, oh, well, this is good enough, we'll do this, and we'll just build the rest of these holes, you know, up here in the trees, but we'll have a couple holes out here that, you know, you can see the ocean from. So I think that's, you know, a really neat thing that Bill, you know, won't just settle for a couple good holes, that he wants to make sure that if he's going to be there, that, again, he can get the full potential out of the site, you know, for that client.
Yeah. It's, I mean, they've, no arguing the work they've been doing. Like, I mean, it's so many great golf courses. It's cool to see. And so, you know, let's switch gears and move more into you and Riley's work at Winter Park. So, you know, the training wheels were off. You know, you were out on your own. You got your name on the project. So for those of listeners that aren't familiar, I'll put some videos in the podcast page that the Golf Channel has done a great job with. But the background of Winter Park is, you know, it was a kind of overgrown municipal golf course that the community kind of banded and said, we want something better. So, Keith, I'm sure you can color it in more, but I'd love to hear about how you guys got involved, how you, you know, won the project, and then we can talk more about, you know, the project as a whole.
Yeah, definitely. So I guess you got to kind of start at square one. You know, you got residents there like Matt Hagerty and Gary Deal, and, you know, they saw their golf course there, and, you know, they loved it. But they saw the potential. They said, hey, we can be better. So, you know, what do these guys do? They put together a task force that then reported to the mayor there, to kind of give him input, like, hey, this is what we're looking at. You know, here's, you know, Matt Hagerty works at the Golf Channel, seen a lot of great golf courses. You know, Gary's been in the field too. So they have, you know, their expertise and their input, and they brought that to the mayor, you know, to say, hey, like, I really think we could be better. So they started a task force. They went to the task force, and they kind of dug deeper into the golf course and realized that there's a lot more work to be done. You know, this isn't just a, you know, do a couple greens and everything's going to be great. You know, the golf course greens had roots growing in them, you know, so they're mowing over roots. You know, the grass is mutated, the course is thatched over, so it doesn't drain properly. So, you know, so they went to the mayor, they went to the task force, they put out an RFP. I put together a team with Riley and Don Mahaffney to put together a team that could get the job done in the time frame that they needed it done. So, you know, when they were looking at us, they saw that we'd be on site every day, and they saw a really big benefit in that. So
that's awesome. So, you know, you go down there. How long did the project take? And kind of, you know, walk us through a little bit of, you know, kind of your vision for the golf course.
Yeah, so it was, you know, three of us out there. So, you know, Riley, myself, and Blake Conant, and, you know, three guys out there, you know, out there shaping, building bunkers, you know, fairways and everything. So it was 3 months, three guys, and a D3. You know, that's what we always kind of laughed a little bit, because a D3 dozer is, you know, we ordered a D5, but we got a D3. You know, it's a very small dozer compared to what we needed to get the job done, you know. So, it was exciting to work with, you know, just like-minded people that were out there to get the best out of the golf course. I mean, it was, I'm trying to think of how to really explain it, but I mean, it's just, you know, I might have to edit this part out, but I don't know really how to, yeah, I don't really know how to put it together. Yeah,
I mean,
sorry.
I imagine it's a crowning achievement. It's, you know, your first golf course with your name on it. It's got to be something that's kind of crazy. It's hard to, you know, process, I'm sure, when you think back to when you were pouring concrete, right?
Yeah, I mean, you know, to think that, you know, you take all those experiences you have and all these different sites that you worked on, and you get a chance to bring all your experiences that you have to a municipal golf course. You know, I mean, we're coming off of, like, Cabot Cliffs. You know, mm-hmm. These are top 100 golf courses in the world that we're working on. And we get to bring the experience that we have to a municipal golf course, you know, for a community in Winter Park, Florida.
Yeah.
I mean, that's, you know, that was a neat opportunity to bring that experience. And that, you know, I guess it's, you kind of sit back and you kind of look at that like, you know, wow, you know, to bring, to give back in a lot of ways to a game that's, you know, given so much to me, to give back to a community where, you know, when we were out there first starting the project, you know, we're watching, you know, young, old, you know, blue collar, white collar, no collar, you know, out there golfing. You know, this is the roots of community golf. And it's like, we can't mess this up.
Yeah.
We had the pressure on us. And then we also had, you know, the Golf Channel. You know, I mean, the Golf Channel's right there. You know, Matt Hagerty, you know, you got Matt Janella. You got these guys that this is their home course. You know, these guys drive by this course every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, you can't mess this up, you know, and you can't come out here and do everything that you've always wanted to build on every golf course. And you got to make it, you know, playable, and it's got to be affordable. And you know, there's so many things that go into your mind when you're starting a project. You know, when you get to the end, you're like, did we achieve our goal? And, you know, I really think we achieved the goal when, you know, you're sitting in the clubhouse and guys are laughing and you're cheering and, you know, they're just having a blast out there playing fun golf, and they're like, you see me carry, you know, the trees on number six to carry the green, or can you believe that bunker shot, or, you know, those type of things. Are the guys that come into the clubhouse and they're like, we just played nine, but we want to go out and play another nine. You know, that's
mm-hmm.
Or the kid that it's his first round of golf, you know, a dad and his son, you know, and the kid's teeing off the deck with his driver, you know, and he hits it out there about 50 yards, you know, to see that, you know,
yeah.
After you work so hard to achieve what, you know, to grow the game. So
yeah, it's I mean, the. I think it serves. I'm excited. I'm gonna get to go down there and play in January, and you know, I'll put a whole write up. But you know, from everything I've seen and the pictures you've sent me before and after, I mean, it's a total transformation. And I think, you know, it serves as kind of a blueprint for, you know, community golf and municipalities, and you know what you can do with, you know, it's relatively lean budget, but you know, everybody wants to go with a, you know, an established name, but a lot of times the best way to go is to go with the you know, up and coming, you know, people that are passionate and that have all this, you know, you have worlds of experience and, you know, have learned from the best in the business, and giving somebody a shot is so, you know, it's they're going to, you know, like they're going to work their, you know, tails off for the project. And I think that's the cool thing about the whole project was that, you know, with it, with the big names and the Golf Channel involved, that you and Riley and Blake got, you know, got to shine when I'm sure you were up against some bigger name people.
Yeah, you know, I mean, it was, it's very humbling to think that, you know, that the city put full trust in us.
Mm-hmm.
You know, how many opportunities where someone gives you that chance, you know, says we trust you, you know, the city never said, you know, well, this is the way we do it. You know, they, you know, the leader, you know, with the mayor, Steve Leary, I mean, I can't say enough about that leadership in Winter Park. If more governments and local governments ran like Winter Park, I mean, we'd be in a whole lot of better place in this country, because with his leadership is what made that golf course. They put the trust in us. They gave us the resources that we needed to be successful. And, you know, I really think we delivered for them. And, you know, it's just, you know, it's the biggest thing. If someone puts a trust in us, we're gonna try our best to deliver every time for a client. And, you know, it's just a really neat story and how it all went down. And I really think that if it's kind of a blueprint that I hope a lot of muni golf courses can maybe look to, call up Winter Park, you know, hey, we have this golf course, you know, we're losing money, it's not going well. I mean, I think we're going to have to sell the thing, and it's going to turn into a parking lot or condos. What did you guys do here at Winter Park? And maybe it might save a lot of these golf courses where, you know, this is where kids learn how to play golf, you know, and this is how we're going to grow the game. So
mm-hmm.
I just hope that a lot of people look to Winter Park and contact, you know, the task force and the mayor and get the information and kind of get that blueprint. And, you know, hopefully, you know, if it's us or someone else, you know, if it's, it's just so muni golf can win and grow. So
yeah, I think it's a core part. I grew up and learned the game on a municipal course. So, you know, I ride my bike to the golf course with my golf bag and just, you know, in the summers and spend all day there. So, you know, having a cool place to play would be, you know, where you have to hit shots and you learn strategy versus, you know, the state of most muni golf courses is just, you know, rip it and chip it. So,
yeah,
you know,
I want to get to some
Twitter questions. We got a couple here. One of them's from a buddy of yours, Trevor.
Trev.
So he wants to know what advice you have for young people trying to learn your craft.
You know, I would say, I mean, in my case, you know, I saw a really big benefit in working for a contractor, like a golf course contractor. You know, the chance to kind of get some experience, work a summer for a golf course or a local golf course, you know, doing ground work or go work for a golf course development company for a summer. You know, get experience. I would say, you know, you just take ownership and work hard and don't lean on a shovel. Don't sit down in a bunker. You know, just work hard. And the people that are, you know, in place, the leadership, will notice that effort. And then they might say, hey, you know, why don't you hop on this excavator? Or why don't you come in on Saturday on your day off? I'm going to teach you how to run a village. You know, I mean, there's more of a chance for someone to give you that chance to learn another craft. If you're working hard, you know, and you're showing that effort, people will make the effort to teach you. And I mean, that's the biggest thing for me is I love to, you know, teach guys how to, you know, I've had guys teach me, you know, I wouldn't be here if there's people out there that like Dave Asplund and thing that give me the chance to get on a piece of equipment or be creative.
And there's a lot of people that have been out there that have given me that chance. And, you know, I'd love to give that chance to anyone that on different projects if people want to come out and work hard. And so I think, you know, first is, you know, see if this is right for you. I mean, this isn't right for everyone, you know. I mean, you know, we're traveling. You know, I'm at home, you know, sometimes maybe 80 days a year. You know, I'm on the road, you know, away from my wife. And, you know, I mean, I'm very lucky that I have a wife that supports me fully and loves to travel. But I mean, sometimes it's not exactly for everyone. You know, I mean, it's kind of a funny business where we're always working ourselves into unemployment. We got to finish a project and then we're unemployed. You know, I mean, so it's, you know, I would just say have a positive attitude, take ownership of whatever you're doing. And people will give you the chance to move up, and I think that's my opinion on my best advice for how to learn.
Mm-hmm. It's a lot like every, you know, work hard and try and be there and be ready.
Yeah,
for anything.
I mean, there's no shortcuts, you know. I mean, when you try to take a shortcut, you're gonna get found out. I mean, so
yeah,
it's definitely it is a fun business. It's very rewarding, but it does have its sacrifices. You know, you do have to realize that you there's a lot of uncertainty. If you're looking for a plan on where you're going to be the next day or the next month, you know, I don't know what next project I'm going to end up when I'm after this project. You know, so you never know. So.
Yeah.
When you even accept the uncertainty, if you're a person that can do that, then this might be the right business for you.
Yeah. It's probably be good for, you know, anybody that kind of is happy to float, you know?
Yep.
So we got one from Andy Roderick, who, you know, he's qualified for the U.S. four ball in the spring. So it looks like he's going down to play Dormy Club while he's down there. So, you know, he wants to kind of know what he can expect from Dormy Club and, you know, you having worked on it. You know, I played it. I got to play it. It's a great golf course. Would love to hear what your experience out there.
Yeah. You know, I mean, you know, I finished up at Sugar Loaf Mountain and then I got sent out there for a little while. I was only there for a short time. It was kind of in the construction phase where you could only work on 32 acres at a time.
Mm-hmm.
So you're only building like, you know, three holes at a time, then you grass those and then you can move on to the next section. So, you know, a lot of that golf course, you know, once I left, I didn't really see the rest of it, you know, completed. I did have the opportunity, which was my first, you know, kind of official Coral Crenshaw green that I got to build was number 7 out there, kind of the reverse Redan par 3, you know, fun little shot in there. But,
yeah.
I mean, when I was in an old town, I got a chance to go back there and kind of, you know, take a little loop and look at the holes that, you know, that were finished. I mean, you gotta think about the shots you make in there. You know, you can make the ground game is, you know, there. I mean, it's, you know, it's just been one of those golf courses that, you know, has gone through a lot of different transitions. And, you know, from what I hear from different people, it's back up there. And I don't know what's, when you were there, what was your take of Dormy Club and the conditions and
I think it's awesome. You got width. The greens are tough. You know, I forget what hole was. You got that. I really like that par 4 that has that downhill shot with the water's not in play, but it's over to the right and it's got those cool cross bunkers coming down.
Yep.
I played it.
I want to say that's 4,
years
possibly. I don't know. Yeah, maybe 4. Kind of has a ravine, and the water's off to the back. Yeah, you know, that's a really neat golf ball there.
Yeah. It's, you know, for me, that was my first time playing in North Carolina, and the land site and the pines, it's just such a unique golf experience for anybody that hasn't been down there and played that kind of golf. You know, it played firm and fast. You know, the green, I loved all the, like, the runoff areas, the fairway around the greens. It's one of my favorite features in terms of golf courses is having, you know, ample, you know, slopes and have that ball run. You know, if you miss that green, have it run 20 yards and stay in fairway, because I think that it's so cool. It's such a unique test and unique shots coming back from those.
Yes, definitely makes you think about what shot you're taking in there. You're not just, you know, your standard. You know, the golf course isn't dictating what you have to do, which is so great on core franchise sites that, you know, the golf course isn't going to say, well, you got to hit this shot. You know, you have options. You know, you're going to use every club in your bag. You know, I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, it's just the great, you know, characters of core Crenshaw projects. So.
Yeah, that's, you know, one of my favorite, you know, architecture kind of principles is I never think that a hole should dictate the type of shot that you have to play. You know, where, you know, off the tee, a slicer can hit a slice, you know, and there isn't all these trees on the left side that don't let them do that, you know.
Yeah.
But there is a specific way that the golf course should be played, you know.
Yeah.
Where, you know, certain, if you're able to hit certain shot shapes, you're rewarded for doing so, but you're not, you know, essentially, you know, penalized heavily for not being able to hit a specific shape.
Exactly. Yep.
It's interesting. It's the, you know, there's golf courses and just playability is, I think, the number one thing that golf courses need. You know,
I mean,
every type of player has fun.
Yeah. I mean, getting that shortcut, you know, instead of having rough, you know, in some of those areas between the transitions, between the tees, you know, on some of these, like, short courses, like Winter Park, where, you know, before the golf course had rough, you know, and now we just one cut fairway and greens. So, I mean, you're seeing the ball run. I mean, these beginners, you know, even if they top the ball and they warm burn it down, they're advancing the ball. They're enjoying it. You know, when you put a bunker in front of them or things like that, and rough, and you just get, you know, it gets frustrating, you know, and
yeah.
And I think that's one thing, you know, get rid of that rough, you know, cut it down short and let people enjoy the game. Don't penalize everyone.
Yeah. And then, you know, for the better players, you make it about angles, you know, you make it,
yep.
You know, that you make it so that, you know, you want to be on the right side of the fairway and maybe you
yep.
have, you know, you have a bunker over there that, you know, only they can get to. I think
exactly. Yeah.
You make it,
and that's,
you know, so strategy based. No, go for it.
Yeah, no, I mean that's one thing, I guess, you know, kind of going back to the Winter Park thing. I mean, you know, we were really stuck and limited because we had roads and we had a railroad. We had different things, but we had to figure out ways to make it challenging for, you know, the low handicapper. You know, how is he gonna, you know, challenge this person, but yet not challenge, you know, the high handicapper. So, I mean, we looked at areas where we built different sets of tees that angled away from bunkers, you know, that if this guy, if he carries this bunker, then he's in good shape, you know, but if this beginner player, that bunker isn't even in play because the angle where we set the tees, you know, just kind of keeping, you know, that in mind, is there are different angles and risk reward that you can put into a golf course that, you know, I mean, as the person gets better in their golf game, then they start moving back to the further, you know, they kind of move back to the tees. And they, you know, I mean, even, I think the cool thing about Winter Park is what we've seen is that even when they shift the tees from not the back tee and they kind of move it up, then some of the guys have been playing the golf course every day are like, wow, you know, this completely changed this hole, and this is new, and it's neat, you know, so
mm-hmm.
I think just factoring in that.
Yeah. So. I mean, it's kind of fun sometimes to play golf courses. Like, you know, I play the back tees almost everywhere I go, but a thing I used to like to do at a golf course I played a lot is I'd play the front tees, like the ladies' tees, and see how low I could shoot. And, you know, it's actually kind of like a fun, cool exercise. I mean, like you think, you know, but it makes you really work on your, like, you know, you're driving up by greens. All of a sudden you have to work on your wedges and you're in places that you're never in before. And, you know, it's just a fun way to change things up.
Yeah. I think that's one thing that we kind of, you know, at Winter Park that we wanted to kind of get people to do was, you know, go play from the back and play your second nine and play from the forward, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you're playing 18 holes and it's got different shots. It's got different challenges. But it's got, it makes you think in different ways, you know. So it's like you get your full 18 in, but you're playing it from different angles and different feet.
Mm-hmm. All right. So our last question here is from Robbie Vogel, and it's about Cabot. He played it in June, and he thought it was incredible. He's wondering if there's any potential or land for a third course, and how much better you expect the Cliffs course to get as it matures.
You know, I mean, you never know. I mean, you got the Kaiser factor, you know, Mike Kaiser. You got, you know, Ben Callendore up there. I mean, you just never know what they have up their sleeve, you know, sometimes. You know, I could see a short course, you know, possibly being there. You know, I mean, I see growth for, you know, another golf course to kind of pull people to kind of be like a golf Cabot Trail type thing to really bring people. I mean, that whole area out there is just beautiful. But if you can go on the Cabot Trail, play, you know, links, you know, you play Cabot Cliffs, you go to Highlands, you know, and then another golf course. I mean, there's not many places like that where you could play that high quality of golf. So I see that there'll be definitely potential for more golf up there. For every course, it takes time, you know. It'll take a few more years, you know. I mean, the thing with Cliffs is it's so popular that you got so many people coming there that you just don't want to wear it out. You know, mm-hmm. You factor all the people playing, but then you got all the caddies on top of it. You think about how much foot traffic, you know, you're putting on those greens and around the greens. You know, but also you're trying to get that much golf in a small window of time that you have to actually get golf out there in Inverness. So, I mean, it's always a double-edged sword there because, you know, you want to bring people in and get them out there and enjoy it, but yet you don't want to wear it out. But I think it really is the winters, you know, how the winter goes, how the course winters. If they get snow covered or they get moisture, you know, how those greens come out of the winter the next year is always a challenge. So.
Yeah, I bet that had some interesting constraints to building it. I bet you had a lot of cold days on a dozer out there.
You know, that was probably the most challenging project I've ever worked on. You know, I mean, you have a small window of time, you know, and all the guys that worked on that project just gave their heart and made a bunch of sacrifices to get that project to where it is now. I mean, to debut at I don't know if it was 19 in the world or some, I don't know, some way up there on the list. I mean, a lot of guys put their hearts into making that project happen, and it was tough days. I'll tell you, it tests you in every which way, and just when you think you're getting it, you know, Mother Nature would come down and beat you down. You know, it was a very very tough project, but very rewarding. I'm just glad that, you know, people are enjoying it. And, you know, Lynx is, you know, what Rod's done out there is an awesome force. You know, it's cool that, you know, Bill and Ben and Rod and all these guys, you know, get to work, you know, close together on a project like that. So, And to have Rod work on Cliffs too, you know, was, you know, you kind of dig into the roots of, you know, these guys, you know, like Bill and Bill sitting and Rod was working at a golf course with them, and they're sitting there, you know, talking about maybe someday building golf courses. And then, you know, you fast forward, you know, 30 years there, and Rod's got a golf course that he designed, and then Bill's building a golf course right next to him. I mean, it's just, you know, just cool stories. You could probably fill hours of podcasts about, you know, with Bill and Ben and Dave Aspen's story. So.
Yeah, it's pretty cool. I mean, I'm really excited to see your career progress in the coming years, and hopefully we'll get you on here, you know, a bunch more and talk about some more cool projects. But really appreciate all the time. I mean, you gave us a good hour plus, and I'm sure you had a long day out on the ridge at the ridge course at Big Cedar Lodge, and you probably got an early morning tomorrow. So
yeah. And you know, I just want to thank all the listeners too. You know, I mean, this is all kind of new for me to kind of be out there. You know, to talk about. You know what? Now it's sometimes hard for me to talk about what I do because I don't want it to come across as, you know, cocky or have an ego or anything like that. I mean, it's just, you know, we're just guys that are really passionate about what we do and really want to work with, you know, people that enjoy the game, and you know, we just want to work with cool people and build cool golf. I mean, if we can do that, then, you know, golf will win. And, you know, it's not about the name of who the designer is or who that is. I mean, it'd be more about the golf course and what that does for the community or the people in that area. So,
yeah,
I just really appreciate, you know, you having me on here. It's always nice to meet people that are passionate about, you know, architecture and find new ways to kind of get the information out to people. And you know, thanks again for having me on here. I hope I didn't mess it up too much. I know my phone dropped out there a couple times, so this will be your last we'll kind of, I know that you're up in your game on the podcast thing, so I guess you can go out with a bang on this one. So
yeah, for everybody out there, I want to say this is the last podcast without a real microphone. So the podcast is, and the next thing we're going to work on, we're going to get some entrance music. So
yep.
The podcast should
stepping
be
set it up.
But I don't know if we'll get a better guest. So I appreciate the time, Keith, and we'll talk soon.
Okay, thank you.
All right, yep. Thanks a lot, Keith. Bye.